Eric said in the hall. Will's calm but hollow voice answered. I don't either.
You think he was stoned?
Daisy whispered. John glanced at her.
Yeah, I do.
Then he's out.
He better be out. I can't imagine Marie keeping him in, stoned or not. What he did was blatantly stupid.
She drew the air into her nose and released it, recalculating her plans. If I can do it, will you dance with me?
Absolutely.
It's a tough piece. The partnering is a bitch.
So am I. A smile cracked through. Then a small laugh.
There you go, John said, pleased. Thanks, Opie, she said.
Don't call me Op. He faded out as he looked over at her, and a flush crept over his cheekbones, blotting out his freckles.
All right, fine. You can call me Opie.
He looked away, rubbing the back of his neck, muttering under his breath.
Jesus, those eyes.
How does fish get anything done?
A bad wrench, but nothing ice and a week's rest won't cure, the doctor said.
Unfortunately, nothing could be done for her fractured pinky except tape it tight to her ring finger and let it heal. The nail bed throbbed for 3 days. So did the vein in Eric's temple whenever he looked at it. James had been dismissed from the concert. John would take his place in Who Cares and partner Daisy in The Man I Love when she was ready to return. Lucky, now in her third year of sports medicine training, was stern. A week means a week, and off your ankle means off. No sneaking into class and doing a right foot bar. The mini vacation turned out to be the perfect remedy for Daisy's rattled spirit. With time to kill, she caught up on sleep for a couple of indolent days. When restlessness set in, she wandered into the catacombs of Mallory, down into the warm shops with their engine-like thrum of buzzing activity. It smelled different down there, like furnaces and oil and sawdust, paint fumes and metal, constant hammering, banging, and clanking, voices over the din, and music. This was Eric's world. Leo Graham didn't take kindly to strangers intruding on his turf, distracting his minions and disrupting the rhythm of production. But he liked Daisy. She brought him coffee and discovered his fatal weakness for a York peppermint patty. She sat quietly and watched. Didn't intrude, distract, or disrupt as the sets for Who Cares were constructed. After a day or two, she became invisible. The design for the ballet was David's senior project. According to his plans, the crew was building a Manhattan skyline to stretch clear across the back of the stage. And no artist's interpretation of the Big Apple either. David spent a whole weekend in New York, photographing the city from a dozen angles and at different times of day. The skyline was as true to life as he could make it, and the lighting design would take it from dawn to dusk. Every building was meticulously outlined in tiny bulbs. Daisy looked up from her book and watched Eric, David, and Neil slog at the thankless task. They stooped over the sets, laid out on sawhorses, drilling holes and placing the bulbs, wiring and taping and testing. They were punchy from the tedium, barbs and cracks flying. Then they fell into focused concentration, singing as they worked. After a period of calm, the horseplay started again. Daisy was crutching downstairs for one of her visits when she finally saw James again. His appearance made her rear back in shock and distaste. Trudging up the open stairwell, he was strung out, unshaven and gaunt, red-eyed and jittery.
This is bad, she thought. This is unstable.
Aye, he said.
More than a little disturbed, she tried to squeeze by with a cool, echoed, Hey. But her crutches made evasive moves impossible, and his hand closed on her upper arm.
Daze.
I don't want to talk to you.
Daze. I'm sorry.
You're not, she said, louder. You're not sorry.
I didn't mean.
Anger bubbled up like foam in her throat.
You did mean. You made a choice when I was in the air. You looked Will in the eye and dropped your arm, so don't you fucking tell me you're sorry. I swear I'll...
Hey!
Both Daisy and James's head flicked up to the top landing. John Quillis had one foot and both forearms on the railing, looking down on them.
Leave her alone, he said.
James's lip curled.
Fuck off, Opie.
Unfazed, John started down the stairs.
Let her by.
I'm just talking to her,
No, you're not. Move along.
He'd almost reached them.
Fuck you, I'll move along, punk.
It was hard to say who was more surprised at what happened next, Daisy or James. Quicker than either could register, John had James pinned against the concrete wall, one arm twisted behind. John's face was composed, but a vein in his neck flickered. His eyes were hard. Something in his stance was both effortless and expert. Daisy's own eyes bulged, wondering if Will had been schooling John in more than workout routines.
Leave her be, John said. You're lucky it was me who came along and not Fish. Go on, Daisy.
She crouched by, letting her knuckles brush John's back in thanks. She expected a parting shot from James to float down after her. Instead, when she glanced up, she saw only a broken little brother, and in spite of her anger, it cracked her heart. Deconstruct the emotions. John and I started rehearsing The Man I Love, but it didn't go well. I guess I was more shaken up than I thought. I'd never had any kind of serious injury before, and it spooked me. When you're a dancer, your body is all you have. It's everything. You're it. You're the means, and one fall or break or bash, and it could be over, Rita said, or at least put you out of commission for a long time. Yes, it threw me. But more than that, I was so damn discouraged. I'd worked hard to build a relationship with James. I gave him my time, my attention, and my trust. I gave everything to give him a chance, and at the last minute, tears stung her eyes. The demoralized disappointment was a rusty nail piercing her heart as fresh as the day. Fresher, as if it had never been felt at all. I feel more upset now than I think I did then, she said. Rita nodded. He took all that time and trust and work and shit on it. Made me a pawn in his little game to get back at Will, and then told me he didn't mean it. You must have felt used. I did. Now I had to start all over again with John, and I had next to no motivation. I couldn't find it in me. I felt like I didn't have enough time to deconstruct the emotions of the dance. The steps were hard enough. We slogged away, but it wouldn't mesh. After a week, John went to Marie and asked if she would switch him and Will. Let Will dance with me. She laughed, shaking her head at the memory of his nerve. I don't know how he pulled it off. One thing Marie did not like was people complaining about casting or asking her to make changes. You take your role, you learn it, and you dance it. You dance and you deal. Those were her rules. But somehow John convinced her, or charmed her, so Will and I ended up dancing together after all.
Which must have been a relief.
I can't tell you. Daisy closed her eyes. As soon as we got into the studio and touched hands, I was calmed. I was confident. I was back where I belonged. We didn't have to dissect a single feeling. We were dancing together again. The relief became the backstory. Daisy had been seeing Rita for 6 weeks, telling her story. Now April of 1992 was on the stage in front of her. The sets were in place. The lights focused. Like David, she had her hands on the curtain rope, ready to pull and put the whole thing into motion. Nothing moved until she pulled. She held it all in her hands. We're getting near to when it happened, Rita said, echoing her thoughts. Yes, Daisy said. About 2 weeks before, James showed up at our apartment in the middle of the night. Lucky saw him out in the backyard, staring up at the bedroom windows. What did he want?
He wanted Will.
Daisy spread her hands. You know, I keep forgetting he was as young as us. I don't know why my memory sometimes makes him much older than he was. He was 21. He was Eric's age. Just a kid who was in love.
Did Will go down and talk to him?
No, Eric did.
He wasn't afraid?
Afraid? No.
Her voice trembled.
Cold swept her limbs. Nobody thought James was dangerous. Damaged? Yes. Needy, an attention addict, but not a vengeful murderer and not suicidal. Eric came back upstairs after a while and didn't seem concerned for James's safety. I asked what they'd talked about, and he said he'd mostly listened. tried to validate James's feelings and get him back to a safe place for the night. He said, "Everything's all right, Daze. Go back to sleep." I remember curling up against his back and drifting off, feeling so safe with him. Thinking about how he made everyone feel safe, and feeling a pride in him I'd never felt before. Proud of who he was and proud to be his. He was so good. He saw the best in people. He was pissed at James, but something in his heart made him go down and talk to him anyway. What does that say?
That he had a big heart, Rita said. Where I come from, we call him a mensch.
But the next morning they found James in the bathroom of his dorm. He'd overdosed on some pills his roommate had. They rushed him to the hospital. He survived. His parents came and got him, took him home to Pittsburgh. And it was the last we saw of him. Until April 19th.
Are you ready to tell me? Rita said. What happened that day?
Daisy took a deep breath. It started the night before.
Sugar Under Fire. Eric came home late from the shop. Finally, the damn sets for Who Cares were done, and he was tired, stressed, and so horny he couldn't see straight.
"Say goodnight," he said, as he pulled Daisy off the couch and slung her over his shoulder like a caveman.
"Goodnight,"
she called to Will and Lucky. "Pray for me."
"We got rehearsal tomorrow, Fish," Will said. "Bring her back in one piece."
"And if you can't," Lucky said, "bring back all the pieces."
"You may want to leave," Eric said from the stairs. "This could get loud."
He kicked the bedroom door shut and pushed Daisy up against it, kissing her with blunt, unapologetic greed. She never loved him more than when he was like this. Always when he was in one of his moods, the air around him seemed to shimmer and press. If he wanted to make love, he put out a shining, warm aura, like twinkling starlight. But on a night like tonight, after long hours of working and keeping David focused and sweating a deadline, he was an impatient porcupine of need, his bristling, edgy mood piercing through his skin.
"Want you so bad,"
he whispered with a shaking mouth, his voice caught tight in his throat. She pulled his shirt off, threw it aside. He was working out all the time that semester, and his body was spectacular. Ripped and lean and sexy. His hands unbuckled and unzipped, and he burst out of his pants, rock hard, worked up and dying for her.
"Jesus,"
she said, closing him up in her fist.
"Tell me about it,"
he said against her neck.
"All goddamn day I've been hard for you."
Her life was defined by the total and complete control she had over her body. But that night, she gave it over to him. Gave up as he turned her away from him, took her hands and put them flat on the bed. From behind, he yanked her jeans open and pulled them down like she was a bad girl who needed to bend over and be spanked. At the corner of the mattress, her jeans around her knees, he held her by the hips and groaned hard as he buried himself in her. The noise she made that night, she who was usually rendered mute at the pinnacle of pleasure, tonight, she reversed her own polarity, opened her throat, and let her voice turn itself inside out. She spread her legs against the bind of her jeans, arched her back into his thrusts, matched him moan for moan, sigh for sigh, until she burrowed her face deep in the pillows and yelled her head off, not caring if Will and Lucky heard, not caring if the neighborhood heard.
"You feel so good,"
he said into her hair. He curled over her and got his hand around her hip, down between her legs and started rubbing her, rubbing it out of her.
"So tight and hot on my cock," he said. "You have no idea."
Her chest twisted around his words as his fingers locked in. She threw her head back and came, hard enough to make her vision double, and then came again. One orgasm linking to another, a chain of them. She couldn't breathe. Her being teetered on the edge of unbeing. Her sanity dripped through her fingers like sand. She almost made him stop, almost reached out to take back the precious control of herself. But instead, she put her trust into his hands, put her own hands behind her, and let go. Eric clasped her wrists,
crossed them in the small of her back, pulled them up tight, not enough to hurt, but enough to hold her down. Enough torque on her shoulders to hold her still, hold her where he wanted her. He moved slowly, letting her feel every inch of him.
"Give it to me," she said, breath hitching in her chest.
"You like that?" His voice curled around the dark and squeezed hard.
"I want it," she said somewhere beyond herself. "All night long, the rest of my life, just keep. God, you fuck me so good."
Fuck was a piece of candy in her mouth, a hot cinnamon fireball on her tongue, almost too intense to bear. She had to pull in air to cool it.
"You fuck me so good," she said again,
sucking on the night, feeling layers dissolve away, sugar under fire. Over and over he slid into her, his strong quads battering her hamstrings. She writhed and came, her body strained with wanting, even as her hands stayed relaxed and open through the grip on her wrists, both bound and free within his embrace.
"You're beautiful," he said.
"I'm so in love with you," she said, lips moving weakly in the damp sheets by her mouth.
"I'm so in love."
He stopped. His fingers melted from her wrists and slid up her arms as he gently pulled out of her.
"Eric,
shh." He gathered her up against his body, letting her catch her breath, his chest hair soft on her back, his mouth running a tender line from her jaw to her shoulder.
"This,"
he whispered,
"all I want. The rest of my life, I just want to make you come like this."
She turned to liquid in his arms as he smoothed her hair, tilted her chin, and kissed her. She could taste cinnamon and knew he was being pulled by a different gravity too, orbiting a different dimension of his sexuality. He helped her out of her shirt and bra, steadied her as she kicked her trembling legs free of her jeans. Her fingers pulled at her earrings and bracelets and rings. She wanted nothing between her body and his. She could feel his heart thudding against her back.
"Me," it seemed to say. "Only me. Only I see you this way. Hear and touch you this way. Fuck you this way."
"Eric," she closed her mouth around his name, pressed it tight to the roof of her mouth.
"All right,"
he said, his hands gliding over her naked skin. She nodded, her mouth against his, her thoughts rolling and folding like a lazy syrup.
"I love you and only you, and you have everything and nobody but you for me, and you and I.
More?
Please."
And she bent over for him again, put her hands behind her back and begged.
"More. More."
An itch no amount of scratching could relieve. It was the scratching itself she craved. An hour later, when they were sprawled in the sheets, slick with sweat and teetering on the edge of consciousness, Eric put her hand against his face, his swollen candy mouth breathing into her palm.
"I love nobody and nothing," he said, "the way I love you."
More Than I Wanted to Dance. "Why do you say it started then?" Rita asked. "Because the next day at rehearsal," Daisy said, "I was," her face seized up, twisting with some unnameable emotion, wringing tears from her eyes and nose. "I was,"
"Stay with me, Daisy," Rita said. "You're safe here."
"I was sitting on Eric's lap in the lighting booth. We were talking about the night before, laughing at ourselves, at how incredible it had been to fuck like that. Complete openness. Complete trust to do anything and say anything. To show the sides of ourselves that were raw and..." She stared, mouth parted in memory, warm wet on her face, and she touched it with her tongue, looking for cinnamon, but finding only salt. "To love like that," she said. "Maybe you're thinking, so what, you got spectacularly laid one night, big deal." But it was more. He and I were so attuned. It wasn't two halves becoming a whole. It was two wholes becoming a greater thing. Eric called it a cathedral.
It was like a giant structure we were continually building together.
You were in love, Rita said, and a love affair is never a finished thing.
No, it's not. I think that night I finally understood what it meant. And the next day, in the lighting booth.
Tell me.
I wasn't finished. I was joking with him about ditching rehearsal and going back to bed. Joking, but not joking. I wanted him.
And then?
A stab of anxiety pierced her chest. A wave of heat slid up her neck and reached sinister hands around her cheeks, clapped invisible fingers over her mouth even as the bile rose up in the back of her throat.
Oh, God,
she said, her voice nothing but an airless hiss. Rita leaned forward a little.
Tell me what's happening.
I don't know.
She sucked air through her nose, fought the urge to flee the office and go running into the street, her fingers clenched, desperate for a sharp edge to cut it out of her.
What happened in the booth?
Rita said.
I can't do this,
Daisy said, half rising off the couch. Listen to my voice.
Rita leaned further into the space between their chairs, elbows on knees, hands clasped.
Stay with me, Daisy. You're here with me, and you are safe.
Daisy sat back as the panic intensified. She'd never known such terror. Her heart strained and squealed, hammering fists against the wall of her chest. She had to get out or she was going to die here. Her feet beat against the floor like a child having a tantrum.
I hate this,
she said through her teeth.
I hate it. I want to run. I want to cut it out of me.
I know. You are pure fight or flight right now, but listen to me because you have a third option. You can stay still, not flee, not fight. Just stay here and let it come to you.
I can't.
You can. You can let it come to you and go through you. Relax your jaw. Let go your hands. I'm right here with you, Daisy. Tell me as it happens.
I feel like I'm dying.
You are living right now. Don't pull back away from it. Just hold still and live.
Hold still,
Daisy thought.
I can do that. I'm good at that.
That's it, Rita said. Let it sit right in your lap. Bring it on. Deep breath.
Let it come. Breathe and come out the other side. Daisy breathed, counting inhales and exhales. Calmness put a hand on her shoulder, then yanked it away and the bottom of her stomach dropped out.
Fuck, I hate this,
she said, torquing and twisting again.
I hate feeling like this.
I know. But trust me, if you don't fight it, if you let it come to you, it will leave faster. Deep breath now. Let it out.
Daisy was starting to shiver.
My skin hurts.
Her teeth chattered so hard she could barely get the words through them.
It's like nauseous in my head.
That's it, Rita said. Tell me as it happens.
Narrate it. You're doing great. In spite of the violent trembling, a single wretched chuckle escaped.
You're always praising my worst moments.
Who's to say they're not your finest moments?
I feel so stupid.
Then feel stupid. Feel afraid. Feel whatever you...
I feel like such shit. I want this to stop.
And it is.
It's stopping. Every second you get through is a second closer to stopping. You're going through it. And you will come out the other side.
Promise?
Daisy said, the pee catching between her shaking lips.
I promise, Rita said.
And in two words, she blew a bubble, a protective force field around the small office, enclosing Daisy in trust.
I'm so scared,
Daisy said, putting the words inside the sphere. Then be scared. And keep telling me about the day.
I can't.
You're going to feel like shit whether you tell me or not, Daisy. You may as well let it out. Throw it on the pile. Her head teetered back and forth on her neck.
I can't remember.
Try. Half a laugh mixed with half a sob.
You're so mean to me.
I know.
Then you pay me to be. Drink some water.
Teeth still clattering in her jaw, Daisy took a sloppy sip from her bottle. Her stomach agreed to keep it, and even allowed another.
You were in the booth with Eric, Rita said. Is it truly the last thing you remember?
Daisy exhaled roughly and closed her eyes.
Marie called me to run the man I love with Will, she said, following the last thread of memory, a ball of yarn down to a few final loops. I left the booth. I walked down the aisle, and I turned back to wave at Eric. I remember looking back and wanting him more than I wanted to dance. God, I wanted him so bad.
Despite anxiety's relentless chokehold, she was deep in another moment now, a ribbon of remembered pleasure weaving through the angst, her heart blazing with joy, her belly filled with heat, secure in her love and her talent and her passion, her life bursting with accomplishment and contentment. Eric slowly shaking his head and smiling on the other side of the window.
He was so beautiful right then, she said. And he was mine. Gorgeous, sexy, and hers. Hers. His smile and his body and his love, ardent, raw, passionate or savage, all of it was hers. Through the glass, she saw him coiled up with hot longing and not even trying to hide it. Chin on the heel of his hand, 1,000 promises in his expression.
Tonight, when I get you alone, I'm going to make you forget your name.
And then, Rita said. Daisy tried to rise above her stomach and follow the trail. Eyes still closed, she gently scratched her nails along the bottom of her memory's barrel, making sure no scrap had gone undetected. I think I remember grabbing my dance skirt from my bag, she said, tying it as I walked down the aisle. It seems like a real memory because I can feel it on my waist. But then, I don't know, I have some little glimmers, but I'm not sure if they happened or if I'm adopting other people's experience and making it mine. Like, I know where my friends were standing because I was told later. David with Neil, behind the Manhattan Skyline set, fiddling with cables and wires. Lucky in the stage right wing, rolling an ace bandage as she talked and laughed with John. Taylor in the opposite wings, her chin pushed out in concentration over her knitting. Near to her, the 6-foot Aisha, stretching with a hand on the diminutive Manuel's shoulder. And James, her broken little brother, who must have been 100 yards from Mallory by then. Daisy's hands slowly pulled the curtain rope, but instead of lights coming up, they began to tunnel out. It becomes like a dream, she said, letting her mind ramble. I can see the tall black shapes of the curtains, and I can sense the stage lights and feel their heat. The lights are Eric. His hands make them go on and off, and fade and brighten and turn different colors. I dance in the light he makes, and the warm heat on my skin. That's him. The lights are his love. Then noise. Noise and commotion, and I'm lying on my back, and I don't remember pain. Just confusion, because Will was lying next to me, and I could see all the blood, but it wasn't registering. I didn't know what was going on. I pushed up on my elbow and tried to look around, and I saw a man in the aisle. He raised his arm and the windows of the booth started exploding and Eric was in there, but I couldn't see him anymore. He was gone. A long breath-held moment, so utterly still she could hear Rita's wristwatch ticking. Before her remembering eyes, the spotlight faded to a diamond star and winked into black. Then nothing, Daisy said. It all went dark. I woke up and I forgot what I saw. For a little while, I even forgot my name.
Lime and Mint. She dreamed, but didn't know she was dreaming. She half awoke and knew she'd been moved from one place to another place, but the dreams that weren't dreams came again, and she was no place. Her eyes were closed, and she didn't know she had eyes to open. Sounds found her ears and waited to be recognized, and then fell out upon her shoulders, and she slept again. Smell sliced through the non-dreams like an organ pipe piercing the quiet of a church. Scent reached hands through the muck and mire of her tired brain. It wafted warm and cool at the same time, passing behind her fastened eyelids and loosening her tongue. The smell curled fingers around her jaw and drew her head over to the side, where it became stronger. Her tongue fell free into her mouth. She became aware of breath in her nose and lungs, a high-pitched thrum in the center of her chest when she released air, an involuntary sound of recognition. She knew this warm, cool scent. Awareness prickled from the center out. Nerves frantically stretched feelers across her brain, reaching for a matching set to make a handoff, hopefully a connection. Arm. Hand. Fingers. A quantum leap. And she realized her hand was not alone. Another hand, attached to the scent. Her fingers squeezed. She made the noise in her chest again, turned her head further, and met with a solid warmth.
I'm here, someone whispered.
She didn't know here, and couldn't put a name with I.
I'm here, Daze. I love you.
Daze dropped into the center of her head like a burning star, and her thoughts began to swirl around it like a galaxy. Daze was the you. She knew herself now, and herself was tired. She held the hand, settled into the tight strength at her side. She breathed in its scent and slept. She woke to her mother's hands on her face.
Hello, darling. The voice like wind chimes. It's all right. Mamu's here.
Her lips pressed into Daisy's forehead, a waft of face powder and a little perfume. As Francine leaned over her, Daisy realized she was in bed. Not her bed, but Mamu was here. That was good.
Hi,
Daisy whispered. The exhaled syllable took no effort. She pressed her lips together, trying to push the M. She couldn't. Her mouth was dry. A man's hand now on her face, a bass note of aftershave, spearmint chewing gum and a little cigarette smoke in his cuff.
Daisy.
Da,
Daisy said. It fell out as she separated her tongue from the roof of her mouth.
Sweetheart,
he said. Her head turned right and left, and she summoned the will to make her mouth say what she needed.
Thirsty.
A bustle of purposeful activity, and a woman appeared by her father. She was dressed in pink. Daisy stared. Her brain turned over like a Rolodex. Finally, it plucked a single card with a single word and turned it up. Nurse. She was in a hospital. Open-mouthed and parched, Daisy stared as the pink woman gave over a paper cup with a spoon sticking out the top. Her father took the spoon and offered it.
Here, sweetheart.
A single ice-cold jewel in her mouth, a wet diamond melting. Her eyes closed in relief. Her tongue danced through the silver cold. Too soon it disappeared. The dry heat took over again. She opened her mouth. Joe gave her another jewel. Cobalt blue cold.
Nice and easy, Francine said. Don't rush.
She didn't rush, but her mouth devoured the ice, seduced and ravished it, leaving only the barest trickle to find its way down her swollen throat. A third cold spoonful, two pieces this time. She kept one on her tongue and sent the other immediately back and down. The relief. She could swallow now. She could breathe. She could think.
What happened?
She said. Over her head, her parents exchanged glances.
Mamu.
She tugged Francine's sleeve.
What's happened?
Joe's hand on her cheek.
Do you remember anything, Daisy?
Her brain turned again in a waterfall of cards, but none were revealed. She opened her lips for another piece of ice, which she held in her mouth, wrapping herself around its cold clarity.
Remember.
To remember meant to know what came before now.
What was before now?
What day is it?
she asked.
Monday, Francine said. Monday.
Now the Rolodex got excited and dealt a bunch of cards. Monday was intro to music theory at 8 and early French literature at 9. Then she had advanced ballet technique class followed by partnering. Then lunch and a little bit of downtime before she was due back in the studio for folk and character dance. Then it was over to the theater because this week was tech week for the dance concert and a flurry of faces, feet, bodies, and music.
Rehearsal, she said. I have rehearsal tonight.
It's all right, Daisy.
She tried to sit up, only now aware of the rest of her body. As if with the hydrating of her mouth and throat, the rest of her life came back to her, and her life was bound up in her body. She had rehearsal, but instead of being in the theater, she was in this bed.
Mamu, did I fall down?
It was the only reason she could think of for being here. But if she fell, she would remember, wouldn't she? And why were her parents here? How bad did she fall? Everything was in context except herself. What came before now?
Darling, something happened in the theater yesterday.
Yesterday. Sunday. She would have had rehearsal. She couldn't remember dancing yesterday. She squeezed her eyes shut, reaching into the black behind her lids and trying to pull it back. Faces to the bodies. Names to the faces. Her friends, sitting in the rows of seats in the theater. The curved rows like a comb, embracing the apron of the stage, sloped slightly downward from the rear of the theater. The lobby doors propped open and the tall glass windows of the lighting booth where,
I just want to ditch this rehearsal and go back to bed with you.
Her eyes flew open. Eric?
He's fine, darling,
Francine said, her hand gentling along Daisy's forehead.
Eric's fine, he's safe.
But what's happened? Daisy cried, again trying to sit up.
Daisy, listen to me.
With a clang, Joe put down the bar on his side of the bed and sat on the mattress next to her right hip.
Yesterday, someone came into the theater with a gun.
She stared at him.
Someone had a gun, and they opened fire on the rehearsal.
He took her hand in his, and Daisy noticed then the IV line snaking from the top of her hand to the drip bag hanging overhead, the rough cotton gown she was dressed in. Her leg, the one by her father, looked small and slim beneath the thin covers. But her left leg was... She looked back at Joe.
You were shot yesterday, Daisy.
You and Will,
Francine said. Her hands spread wide like a starfish on the crown of Daisy's head.
He's fine, though. You're going to be fine, Daisy. I promise.
Her voice betrayed her on the last word. Frayed like a bent stick of green wood. Daisy's eyes flicked to her mother's face, then down to her own legs. The covers over her left leg looked domed. Some structure underneath held them aloft over her leg. She pushed up on one elbow and reached.
Daisy, no.
Her father's hand stayed her.
You're not strong enough yet. Not yet. It's going to be all right. We'll fix everything, I swear to you, sweetheart.
She looked at him, closed her fingers around the sheet,
and pulled. Daisy.
Above her knee, her thigh was swathed in gauze. Out of the gauze fed another tube, filled with an evil yellow fluid. She kept pulling. A wire cage, like a wigwam's frame, arched over her calf. Her teeth pressed together, her fingers clenched hard. Her calf was flayed.
It looks worse than it is, darling,
Francine said, sliding arms around her.
Look at me. It's not forever. It will heal, I promise.
Daisy looked only at her leg. From knee to ankle on both sides, they had sliced her calf open, diamonds of angry flesh and muscle. Red meat bulging from the edges of her skin, which were hard and yellow in some places, black and blood-crusted in others. Her flesh was falling out of her leg. They ruined her. She pushed her teeth together hard, feeling her eyes grow bigger.
Her parents were talking. They explained she was shot in the thigh. The bullet severed her femoral artery. The initial surgery seemed to have been a success, but complications set in. Pressure began to build up in her leg. They had to cut her. They took turns, finishing each other's sentences, slapping words like inadequate band-aids on the bleeding mess that was Daisy's life.
"To save your leg, Daisy," Joe said,
taking her face in his strong hands.
"Look at me, sweetheart."
His voice was quiet and commanding. A soldier. He wasn't afraid of anything. Almost anything. He heard too much in the jungle nights. Saw too much. He still hadn't turned around and looked at his daughter's leg. Daisy turned her head out of Joe's grasp and put her free hand over her mouth. She stared down at those red diamonds on her leg and wanted to scream. It was either scream or die.
"Where's Eric?"
she said through her fingers. She felt her parents exchange looks once more.
"I'll get him."
The bed rocked gently as Joe got up and left. Francine gathered Daisy's head close. Her clothes smelled of lavender.
"I promise," she said. "You'll dance again, I promise, darling."
The door to her room whispered open, followed by the squeak of sneakers on linoleum. She smelled him first. Skin that wafted a little warm like lime, and a little cool like mint. He sat where her father had been, said nothing as he put his hand on her hip, and followed her eyes to her flayed calf. She heard him pull his breath in but not let it out. Mouth still squeezed up tight in her fingers, Daisy looked at her mother. Always they had understood each other, worked in tandem to keep Joe's demons at bay. Now Daisy bored her eyes up into her mother's pale face and thought, "Take him out of here." Francine's head tilted. Her eyes closed a moment. She hugged Daisy's shoulders hard, reached to cup Eric's chin. She left the bedside, putting her arm through Joe's and coaxing him out into the hallway. Daisy was crying before the door closed. She fell back, hands to her face. Her throat was caving in. Her eyes were melting. Thick, molten despair and rage boiled up in her stomach and flooded her chest in a lament that couldn't escape. She wept, but it wasn't enough. It barely penetrated. They cut her leg to release the pressure. Nothing could release her grief now. Her fingers dug into her face. Her nails found her skin and pressed. 10 hard crescents, looking to punch a hole in the shock, puncture the fat balloon of loss swelling in her chest and head. Her eyeballs and eardrums bulged. Her teeth threatened to fly out of her gums. Her ribs strained against it. Something had to give. Eric took hold of her. Finger by finger, he peeled her hands away from her head, then took her wrists and put them up around his neck. He leaned down, making a wigwam frame over her body. His clean clothes smell over citrusy skin, his arms and chest wide and strong. She buried her face in his sternum and screamed. He didn't flinch, didn't move. His arms were tight. She screamed again, down in the dark, warm cave of his chest and arms. He didn't shush her, didn't soothe her with words, didn't make promises or swear. He held the frame, stayed still and domed over her body as she drew in another ragged, terrible breath, loading the catapult and setting it alight. She exhaled, sliced the rope, and yelled her bones apart. The ramparts crumbled, the turrets fell, and the moat flooded everything. It all came up from the depths of her, and then she was choking on it. The pink nurse made it just in time, seizing a basin and sliding a strong, competent arm under Daisy's shoulder blades. They got her to sit up as the heaving waves exploded, hot acid scorching her throat and nose. She was on fire now, her blood roiling and burning like lava along her limbs. She couldn't get a breath, couldn't stop it. They cut her leg. She would never dance again. It was over. The carefully laid connections and context started to unravel. Without Eric over her to fix her place in the universe, Daisy was cut loose and drifting. She was falling down.
Eric ran a cold cloth over her face, and she clung to the sensation. He spooned her some ice chips, more cold jewels, but it didn't help. She was falling. She was dying. Eric set his hands on her shoulders and pressed her back.
"Look at me,"
he said. She fought to focus. On the other side of the bed, the pink nurse fiddled with the IV line and a syringe. Eric turned her face toward him.
"No, look at me. Look only at me."
Blinking rapidly, she put her eyes on his. He stared back. His pupils widened, eclipsing the honey brown. They shrank, then widened again. She saw her face reflected in the black. There she was.
"There we are," the nurse said.
"Look at me," Eric said.
Daisy felt her chest start to smooth out. The distant edges of her mind grew blurry as she looked at her reflection in Eric's eyes.
"I see me,"
she whispered. "Look only at me."
"Only at you,"
Daisy said. The edges were crumbling and drifting away like stardust. His hand slid against her face, his thumb gliding beneath one eye, warm like lime, cool like mint. She barely blinked now. Her chest rose and fell easily. The last layers of her mind peeled away.
"Only me,"
he said.
"Only you.
This.
This."
She slept. In His Skin. A detective came into her room and asked her questions about what happened in the theater. She couldn't help him. She didn't remember. The brick wall across her memory frightened her. She tried to scale it, digging for toeholds and crevices to jam her fingers in.
"Who was it?"
she asked. "James," he told her. "James shot her. James tried to kill her."
"Do you know why he would target you?"
the detective asked.
"No,"
she said.
"I was water in the desert."
She grew frantic and hysterical under the questions. She wanted Eric. He wasn't there. She needed to know where he was. It was dire, a tickle at the edge of her memory which became a scrape, then a slice. She couldn't remember. She began to call for him, then scream for him. The detective rang the bell, and the pink nurse came to inject something in the IV line. Daisy didn't fall gently into sleep. She was sucked down into a black void, clawing and fighting. It was so dark behind her eyelids, so big with no frame to support it. It would implode, collapse, crush her in an airless vacuum.
"Where are you?"
The words coiled into a whirlpool. The gelatinous black curved around her with sharp edges to peel the rust of her skin off.
"Where are you?"
Her mind awoke, and her awareness unfolded. The silence leaned against her ears, and she smelled Eric. Her eyes slowly opened.
"Hey,"
he said. He leaned one forearm on the mattress by her shoulder, rested the other palm on her cheek. She closed her eyes, opened them again. She could see herself in his pupils.
"Feel better?"
She nodded, looking at herself and him. Her chest was serene. She felt no pain. She even managed to lift the corners of her mouth in a weak smile before thinking,
"What am I going to do?"
The smile faded. Eric's hand continued its gentle path over her face and hair. She shut her eyes, moved her forehead into the cup of his palm. He held her still. She breathed him in, listened to the sound of nothing.
"What will I do?"
Her eyes opened. Breathing deep, she stared down cross-eyed at his arm, not seen, and then seen. Beneath the heel of his hand, a blob of color swam into focus. Her hand took his wrist, slowly drew it away from her head. She stared at the tattoo. While she was sleeping, he had a daisy inked under the heel of his hand. Her fingertips came up to touch it, touch where the skin was still pink and puffed around the black outlines and the yellow eye. A hint of white in each of the petals. One of them was slightly tattered.
"Eric."
He said nothing. His fingers folded loosely onto his palm and then opened again, like petals.
"Does it hurt?"
Her voice broke apart. Her heart swelled in her chest, squeezed the tears out her eyes.
Yes,
he said. She pulled his wrist against her neck as he leaned over her again. She nestled the daisy tattoo against her as she pressed her wet face into the safe warmth of his chest. His love was a frame around her, a dome over her. It was warm and cool, and it held still.
I am here, in him. I will forever be in him now, in his eyes and in his skin.
Nobody loves me like you, she said. Under his tattooed hand, she fell into beautiful, soft sleep. They moved her out of the ICU onto the main ward. Visitors were allowed, and with the visitors came more pieces of the story. Lucky came to her. She scooched onto the narrow border of mattress, snug to Daisy's side, held her tight, and told her Aisha Johnson, Taylor Revelle, and Manuel Sabena were dead. Daisy cried hard, her face pressed into Lucky's spiral curls in equal parts grief and confusion. She still didn't understand what happened, still couldn't come to grips with the gaping chunk of time ripped out of her memory where such violent and irrevocable things took place. Her friends were dead. Her leg was sliced, Will was shot, Marie was in a coma. But Lucky was here.
You saved my life, Daisy said.
Everyone said so. Lucky's EMT training and quick, level-headed thinking helped save both lives and limbs in the theater. Lucky's hands were ice cold. She trembled next to Daisy.
I was so fucking scared, she said.
Where were you? In the wings with Opie. He pushed me down and threw himself on top of me. But there's no exit on that side of the stage. We were penned in. Daisy held her tight. Opie would have done something. Jesus, is he a fucking prince or what? He was. John thoughtfully brought Daisy a book, Stephen King's The Eyes of the Dragon, and a big bag of Swedish fish. One of his cheekbones was badly bruised. When he threw himself down to shield Lucky, he hit his face against one of the boom stand bases. Daisy touched the greenish swelling, and he gave a wincing smile, but his eyes wouldn't meet hers. He seemed upset and fretful, but unable to articulate if it was any one thing or simply everything. After a few sweet but awkward minutes, he slipped away. Case came. He was shot in the shoulder, and his arm was in a sling. He took her hand and gently told her Marie Dell'Amici had died. He held Daisy's head against his chest as she cried, then tenderly set it back on the pillow as she dipped and drooped back into exhausted sleep. Pain in her leg woke her up. She opened her eyes to find David in the chair next to her bed, an ankle perched on one knee, engrossed in the eyes of the dragon. He closed the book around a finger and hitched forward, his eyes wide and happy. He touched the tip of her nose, and his smile was beautiful.
Look at you,
he said.
Still the prettiest thing I've ever seen.
I'm so glad to see you, she said, and meant it. Tell me what happened. Tell me everything. The smile faded as he took her hand. He told her how he and Neil hit the deck behind the Manhattan skyline set when James started shooting. Between a crack in the buildings, they watched James jump off the stage and open fire, witnessing the ensuing stampede as people made it out the lobby doors. Or didn't. Silence descended on the theater, leaving only James standing alone in the aisle, gun in hand.
We were about to make a dash for the wings, David said. Then I saw fish come out.
Thoughts of escape were abandoned as Eric came out of the lighting booth into the aisle, crawled a careful distance, and then sat on the carpet up against the seats.
I couldn't hear anything, David said, his eyes brimming. But I knew Fish was talking to him,
trying to talk him down. He was holding up his hand like he was showing James something. Even with a gun in his face, Fish was in control of the situation. Fucking human Valium, that guy. David watched as Eric tried to talk to James, talk him down, get him to stop. And James stopped by putting the gun under his chin and blowing the back of his head across three rows of seats. Daisy swallowed hard. She had never known such weary sadness, a despair that was hollow and decayed like a rotting tree.
Why?
She whispered.
David, I don't understand. What did we ever do to... Why did he do it?
David's gentle fingertips touched the tear tracks on her cheeks.
Because we were happy,
he said.
That's all.
She squeezed her face hard, nodding against the crying. Her leg howled. Her heart wailed.
It's all right, Marge, David said. Don't cry, honey. It's over now.
The pain intensified, and she broke down. The nurse administered another dose of morphine. David hitched his chair closer, opened the eyes of the dragon, and read aloud until the drug took hold and she was asleep again. An orderly brought Will to Daisy's room in a wheelchair, parked him close to the bed, and left them alone. They were desperate to embrace, but they could only awkwardly reach around their injuries and rest their heads together, weeping.
I'm sorry.
Will's voice was a tatter of sobs.
I'm sorry, Daisy. I'm so sorry.
It wasn't your fault,
she said.
It was.
No, don't say that.
He was coming for me, coming for everything I loved.
I know, it's all right.
Everyone's wondering why he didn't go straight for Lucky,
he said.
Don't they get it, Daisy? Don't they see? He knew what he was doing. He knew what would kill me, and he went after it.
He fucking went after Fish. It's all right, she said, stroking his head.
I don't know what I would have done if he... Jesus Christ, I watched him do it. Watched him put the gun right in Fish's face, and I swear to God, Daisy, I...
Will, please, she said. Don't talk about it anymore.
I'm sorry.
Will sat up, sniffing hard and shaking back his hair. When his good hand took Daisy's, it was with the grip of a partner.
You're going to get through this,
he said.
You're strong, and you'll get through this, and you'll dance again. I know you will. And I'll be there with you, all right? We're going to make this work. We can do anything. Don't cry, Daisy.
Eric came every day, and every day he seemed thinner and paler. His eyes were circled and his hands shook. He squeezed beside Daisy's good leg, his head on her shoulder, and she picked up the cigarette smoke in his hair and clothes. She only knew him to be an occasional social smoker, but what she smelled now was pure habitual need. She couldn't hold him in her arms, only lace one hand with his, and run the other over his head, his jaw snugged in her palm, and his tears wet on her fingertips.
Everyone's saying I was brave for leaving the booth,
he said, sounding choked and hoarse.
And it's bullshit. I left the booth because I thought you were dead. I left the booth because I'm a fucking coward, because I'm afraid to live without you. I went out of there to die. Not to stop James, not to save anyone. I went out of the booth because I can't breathe without you. That's the truth.
Shh, she whispered. It's all right.
I can't breathe without you,
he said, his voice dissolving now.
I can't either. Hold on to me, honey. It's all right.
He dug the heel of his hand into his streaming eyes.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't be doing this. It's not fair to you.
Listen to me, she said against his hair. I don't remember anything. People are telling me what happened, and it's like they're talking about a movie. I don't remember any of it. I woke up, and nothing was fair. Nothing made sense until you walked in the room. Don't ever be sorry for needing me. If I'm your heir, then you're my... The sentence trailed away. She was weary and grieving, and her leg hurt. She picked up his hand and ran fingertips over the tattooed Daisy.
This, she said. I'm in your skin now. You keep me alive.
A shiver swept over him.
I thought you were dead,
he said.
Shh, honey. You're so tired. Close your eyes.
I love you.
I'm right here, she said. I'm in your skin, and I won't disappear, I promise. Close your eyes now.
He nestled into her shoulder. His hand in hers twitched a few times. Then he was still, breathing soft and slow.
Her eyes were dry and alert as he slept. They looked daggers at her flayed leg, staring down the ugly red flesh and the blood-caked edges.
If I can't dance, then all I have left is him.
She inhaled hard at the smoke smell in his clothes, desperate for a cigarette, her nail worried at the calluses on the pads of his fingers, a nervous twist in her stomach, a feeling this was the price she paid for something. But she couldn't remember what.
As a mother.
It was all people talked about, Daisy said. How Eric went out of the booth, crawled through broken glass, and went out into the aisle where James was with a gun.
It was an incredibly brave thing to do,
Rita said. They said he was a hero, Daisy said, but he never believed it himself. Not even when my father gave him a medal. He gave Eric the Purple Heart he earned in Vietnam.
What a beautiful gesture.
Eric tried to talk to James. James trusted him once, but he was too far gone, I guess. And he shot himself. She looked up at Rita. I don't think Eric ever got over it.
Nobody would.
It changed everything. And everybody.
Of course it did. It's a life-altering experience,